I'm Janice, it is Rio Rancho, New Mexico, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you for inviting me. So I got myself some notes, because I tend to babble if I don't have something written down. First thing I wanted to say is I hear a lot about traumatic family lives in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was one of those lucky people who had a pretty normal family life. I had parents who loved me and supported me. I had an aunt and uncle who were like grandparents to me. So I didn't have any of that. However, both my parents were chronically ill. So I had what went along with that. And part of my mother's problems is that she had major depression. And I was diagnosed with depression when I was about 12 years old, but I wasn't treated at that point in time. Heavens, there wasn't anything I would have done, because they didn't think kids back then, and in the early 1960s, they didn't think kids got depressed. So that started before I started drinking. So I know that the depression came before the drinking came along. I lived in Kansas. It wasn't a dry state, but there was no liquor by the drink, and you had to buy things at liquor stores. And the only thing that you could get at what they would consider a bar was 3.2 beer. And I had never liked American beer. It was only when I got to have Guinness and stuff like that that I liked beer. So I didn't start drinking till I was about 18. I could drink around my parents. Drinking age was 21, but my parents belonged to some clubs where you'd have liquor books, so you could, you know, buy certain kinds of drinks. And that's when I started drinking. But I didn't start drinking alcoholically, and that's kind of surprising to me when I look back at it, because there is alcoholism in my family on my mother's side. Her father and who I remember seeing, maybe. In fact, I'm not even sure I remember seeing him. I've been told I saw him a couple of times. And her brother, who I didn't know, she even had a brother till I was in college and he showed up on our doorstep. So I can remember when I started drinking, I said, there's alcoholism in my family. I have to be careful. I can never take a drink if I need one. And you know what happens with those kind of things. That went by the wayside. So I went to college. I got married 2 years into a Marine. Lots of fun being a military wife in the 1970s here. I finished school when he was serving. So we were apart for 2 years. And by the time we got back together, we were kind of different people. So the marriage lasted about 7 years. And I was drinking, and as I drank, as time went by, I started drinking heavier and heavier. I didn't realize that until I started doing a drunk-a-log at one point when I wrote it down. So we got divorced. I moved to Houston. This is when Houston was booming. And I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't make a lot of money. And we were in the middle of the gas crunch, which meant I couldn't get gas all that often, and I had an older car, so I basically could drive to work and back, I could go around the houses, places around. So I started going to the bars for happy hour, because you could actually eat your dinner at happy hour in those days. And it was in that year that I went over the line from being a heavy drinker to being an alcoholic. And then it took me another 23 years to get to AA. So I was about 29, I guess, that's when I figure I went over that line. I was periodic. So I could go for long periods of time without drinking. I didn't drink every day. I did a lot of bar drinking. It's a wonder I only have one DWI, but when I moved to Texas, that's where I was living then, there was no such thing as there wasn't even an open container law. So You know, so I remember being stopped by the cops once and just being sent home. But it was way later after MAD was founded and the pendulum was swung the other way before I ever got a DWI. Anyway, so things went on. I could go for long periods without drinking. I could stop even till the time that I stopped drinking, you know, like on AA, there were still times I could moderate. I mean, I could have a couple glasses of wine, get up, go home. But I still did a lot of bar drinking. And my poor second husband, I'd say I was working late and then I'd be at the bar for an hour and a half or something, and then I'd drive home. And I did that, and it, you know, we moved from Houston to San Antonio, and it got worse. And I had a DWI when I was in 1996. I went to one AA meeting. I didn't find anything but differences, and everybody was smoking, and I'm a non-smoker, and I thought I was going to die before I got out of that meeting. So fast forward to 2004. I stopped off at the bar after work, and I hadn't had much to eat that day. So what I remember is I had a couple of glasses of wine, and I probably had more than that, but I don't remember. And I got in the car and I drove, you know, I was driving home. And I had been got to the point where I was having blackouts, and I'd find myself somewhere on the freeway having to walk to a gas station. And this time, instead of doing that, I rolled my car off the feeder road from the freeway overpass onto the feeder road, and should have killed myself, but I did major damage. I cut tendons, I degloved my arm, you know, I bruised an eye. And the only reason I didn't wake up in jail ward was because my DWI that was supposed to stay on the books for 10 years, and they either spelled my name wrong or it got deleted early. So I dodged that bullet. But I woke up, you know, I've never remembered the accident, probably a good idea. I woke up at like about 5 in the morning with my husband looking at me and saying, you know, laying in the hospital bed and hurting like hell. Didn't do that on purpose, did you? And I said, no. So I didn't know that was my fault. So I worked at it, and I, you know, I ended up getting most of my function back, but you know, I have a skin graft, and my fingers on my left hand don't straighten. They work, but they don't straighten. And but you know, that would have got a lot of people into AA. I didn't get there for another year and a couple of months. I couldn't drink around my husband anymore, but if he was out of town, I could, you know, go and have a couple drinks. And I really didn't drink much at all. And then something happened at work, and something happened at work that I decided was unfair, and I ended up back at the bar. And in 2 weeks, I went for one glass of wine to driving home really sloshed. And I got home, and my husband had enough. He started throwing things out of the house. And he did bring things back in, but he didn't talk to me the next morning. He didn't put on his wedding ring. I knew I was in, yeah, deep shit. And for some reason, that just happened to be the morning that I got knocked enough on the head. I went in the bathroom, looked in the mirror, and said, "You're an alcoholic and you need help." And because I'd had that one meeting back in 96, I knew about central office. So I went downstairs and I called, and I got a meeting for that night. And I asked for a non-smoking women's meeting. Of course, by that time, smoking, at least in the United States, had been banned inside the rooms. So I go to this meeting. I call my husband and I beg for one last chance, and he gives it to me. And I go to the meeting that night, and I got the location for one side of the street and the time for the others. So I ended up getting into this meeting halfway through, which was probably pretty good because I was an atheist by then. I've been an atheist since my mid-20s. And what I missed was all the God stuff. I heard people's stories. I could relate to those stories. I felt at home. And after the meeting, I went up and said, "How do you join?" And they gave me phone numbers. And I'm sure they expected me back at another meeting during that week. And when I only came back that next Friday, you know, hell, I didn't know about going to more than one meeting. And I didn't realize why they were so glad to see me until much later. Anyway, I had two sponsors go out on me very quickly. And my third sponsor told me after I'd been sober a year, do you remember reading the steps and saying, I don't know if I can do this because I'm an atheist? And I said, no, I don't remember saying it, but I'm sure I did. Well, what I was lucky is my second sponsor who got me through my inventory in step five, she was agnostic. And so we kind of slid through two and three. I always said that I was able to do it in traditional AA because of Jimmy Burwell and the God as you understand God at the end of step three. I don't think AA would have spread around the world if that hadn't been there, because that gave people some kind of out about God. And it allowed for stuff besides Christianity, even though the book is heavily Christian. I had done that inventory and that had done well. And I went on vacation. I came back. My second sponsor had come out, had gone out and never got back in and out, in and out, and in and out. And I didn't ask the last time I was back there. I didn't see her. I was afraid to ask. I don't know what had happened. So I got this third sponsor, and she was much more gaudy. And she kept saying, you're going to have get a God with a big G. And I tried. And then Katrina happened. And I said, oh, no, I can't do this. And I told my husband, I thought, I'm not sure I can stay because I can't believe in her God. Well, luckily, I'd started going to a treatment center with a group of women from that Friday night group at about a month sober. And I had them to talk to. And I had one woman in particular. Her name was Martha. She and I are still very good friends. And she said, no, you don't have to believe like Sue believes. And that's why I'm still here, I think. So as time went on, I kept on working. I got a year sobriety, and I realized that things hadn't gotten any better at work. That was one of my excuses for drinking. If you have my job, you drink too. And the fact that it got worse, but I didn't want to drink over it anymore. So when I was about a little over 3 years sober, we retired. We retired early because we both lost our parents within. I lost my father. My husband lost his mother in about a 4 month period of time. And they both left us money. We did not know that they were going to leave us. And so we had enough to retire early. And he was tired of living in San Antonio with all the military stuff. And I was tired of living if you weren't right of Attila the Hun, they thought you were a communist. It's what pushed me over the line from, I grew up in a Republican family, and I went over the line left of center living in San Antonio. So had to get out of Texas. So we moved to New Mexico. We researched this so we know we'd end up, you know, because we'd gone to San Antonio because my husband's job, it was either there or go back to the East Coast. And East Coast were real expensive, and San Antonio was not. But we probably would have gone to the East Coast if we had known how bad the politics were going to be. So we moved to New Mexico. And so we'll be in New Mexico ever since. And I have 16 years and about 3 months now. So I'm proof you can do this without having a higher power. Because I knew, I mean, in traditional meetings, I'll say, and I do believe this to a point, that my higher power is a group of drunks, as Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, and all the people who've come before. But I credit myself with being able to do this is because when I walked in the door, I knew I wasn't running the world and it was a good thing. And that made it possible for me to do the work, to look in the mirror and, you know, look at myself and say, there are things that aren't right here. I didn't find secular AA until COVID. I have a sponsee who's also an atheist, and her sister tuned us into California meetings, and it's just gone from there. So I am I don't know how long I've been battling, but, you know, I, like I said, I don't have much of a drunkalog, as far as I can see. But I really, you know, I, this last 16 years has been, have been the best years of my life. It, and it saved my marriage. So we've been married over 30 years now. I was lucky to have a husband who liked what I became when I got sober. That doesn't always happen. I've seen a lot of divorces. And he's a normie, so, you know, he never really did understand. And because he's a normie, there's still alcohol in the house. I was very lucky that I didn't realize it, but once I had looked in that mirror and said, you're an alcoholic, you need help, I'd have a physical desire to drink for a long time. And then I'd have, you know, these little mental urges. Oh, it'd be nice to have a glass of wine. Then I'd remember where I came from. And if I had anything serious, I'd go back to my doctor. And but by then I'd been on antidepressants for years, and I still am. I'll have to be all my life. But, you know, so I, you know, I credit AA with having the life I have now. And I credit being able to stay in AA because I started service work so early, and I had the people to talk to. And I've done it all. I got out here, and I've been to GSR, and I went to district, and I went to area. And after, and I was secretary for the district. And after that, well, it was like a GSR for about 3 years because I got in the middle of the term. And by the time that was up, I said, I've had enough of this. And I, you know, I backed out of everything I was doing, even my central office shift. And for a year, looking at what I really wanted to do in AA, and I don't want to get back into the politics. I like leading meetings. I like having a central office shift. I like going to treatment centers. I'll probably, when they start allowing us to go back out to the women's prison in Grants, I think I'm going to try to do that again. I had to drop that when I got so involved in district and area. So that's what I have, guys. Thank you for asking me to speak. And I'm done.